Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 12th, 2006, and this is show number 30. Well, it's another hot, sunny February day in Southern California. My neighbor said we hit 91 degrees today, but I could never find a thermometer that said anything over 78, but still, I don't suppose I should complain in February and all. So do you remember last week I was whining and complaining about that crackling noise? And I don't know if you noticed, but the sound quality was pretty nasty last week, and that was after 2 hours of goofing around with trying to figure out what that noise was. Well, sat down to record today, put my ear down to the PowerBook. All sounded good, nice and quiet on the Western Front, so I'm happy. Plug in my microphone and my headset, and it's the weirdest noise. I don't know if it's the... My husband thinks it's a hard drive, but I don't understand why it seems to be caused by the fact that I'm trying to do a recording with a microphone and headset. So for today's recording, I actually broke down and changed over to another computer because I just can't figure out what this thing is. If anybody knows what might be coming up and happening in my PowerBook, I'd sure like some advice because I'm stuck on this. Shoot me an email at allison@podfeet.com if you've got any clue to what my problem is. Thanks a lot. Well, it's time for a new country update. This week we picked up Bahrain and Lithuania. I especially enjoyed watching the opening ceremonies of the Olympics because I was watching for countries that are involved in the NoSillaCast. When Macedonia marched in, they had them come in alphabetically under the letter E because in Italian, former starts with EX, and I knew that Macedonia was the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, so I actually understood. I know, you guys are all good at geography, but I only made this connection a few weeks ago as I've tried to study up and not sound like an idiot with our vast international audience. Geez, I hope I didn't mess that up. Well, it's time for another earnings report. As you may recall, in January, I posted my 2005 earnings off of my Google AdSense. That was where I made a grand total of $1.04 in 2005. I'm pleased to announce a 400% increase in earnings, as for the month of January, I earned a whopping $2.13, so keep those clicks coming on my Google ads. In the last month, the number of visitors to podfeet.com has absolutely skyrocketed. We're over 2,000 visitors slash listeners to the NoSillaCast. Isn't that awesome? Just thrills me to think that so many people get value out of this content. Now here's the really weird part. While the unique visitors continue to climb, I can actually see how many visitors come that have never been there before and within that current month, and I can see how much bandwidth they take up and all that. We're actually on target for about 4,000 visitors this month. What I don't know is how many people listen to the podcast on the web, how many download it through an aggregator like iTunes or iPodder or Juice Receiver, and how many people just read the show notes and don't listen at all. As I've said before, I really believe that whatever way you want to get the content is the right way. Some people think that we should do bad show notes or just, you know, little snippet show notes with just the links to make people listen, to force people to listen. But I think that's contrary to the whole concept of podcasting. It's supposed to be what you want, when you want, and how you want it. It's not about me, it's about you. So I'm trying to run some Perl scripts that are supposed to tell me how many people downloaded the podcast, but the data from them doesn't really match my analysis of the raw data using Excel. Okay, so I'm kind of a geek. I analyze a lot of data using Excel. But anyway, I have no clue of how to make changes in a Perl script to fix it. So, while I kind of did my fingernails during computer science class, so I'm kind of struggling with the Perl part of it. But I'll probably get that running eventually and have some clue to where people are coming in from. But my question to you is, do you listen or do you read? Do you listen at the website or do you use an aggregator? I may do an online survey soon. I found a cool open source one, but I don't know how to load it or anything, so I'll have to figure that out. But until then, shoot me an email at allison@podfeet.com and tell me how you get the content and why you like that way better than any other way. It'll help me understand how to make things better for you. Apple announced a new iPod this week. It's the 1 GB iPod Nano for $150. This makes the line complete. For almost exactly every $50, there's an iPod for everyone. The 512 MB shuffle dropped down to $70. The 1 GB shuffle's now down to $100. Then you have the 1 GB Nano I just talked about at $150, the 2 GB Nano at $200, the 4 GB Nano for $250, and the 30 gigabyte iPod with video for $300. And then finally it jumps up by $100 up to the 60 gig iPod with video for $400. Personally, my favorite is still the 4 gigabyte Nano for my world. Big enough to put a lot of podcasts in it, some music and some photos. Of course, that's my world. But still teeny in size and easy to hang on to and easy to carry around, throw it in a purse or a pocket. I want to tell you about a really cool and different search site. I still start at Google for everything I do, but let's say you wanted to find out something about a country. Let's say Lithuania, since they just joined us. You could type in Lithuania into Google, but you'd get piles of unrelated information. You just get, you know, every time anybody said the word Lithuania and, you know, sorted by how many times people check that website out. But try out Answers.com instead. Answers.com gives you information about the country, but it's categorized information. It has information from the dictionary, the encyclopedia, maps, local time, geography, phone dialing code, 370 for Lithuania, if you're wondering, currency exchange, statistics, the words to the national anthem, WordNet for definitions of where the name came from, and Wikipedia. From there, you can dive down into the detail of any of those sections to learn more. I think I might start using Answers.com to link to the countries on my website. It was suggested to me by a listener that using the CIA might be a bit offensive for some of us outside of the U.S., and the last thing I want to do is be insensitive, so because my whole deal is all about inclusion, so I might switch over to Answers.com. It's a real, real nice interface. I also tried looking up Google itself in Answers.com, and I found that it the website adapts to the kind of thing you search for, which makes sense, not just all about countries, and it brought a completely different set of categories from when I queried out a country. The categories it returned were technology from the Computer Desktop Encyclopedia and company from MarketWatch. Anyway, I think this is a great site when you're looking for some specific information and don't just want a gigantic pile of Google hits on something. Check it out at Answers.com. I have a productivity improvement for you because I think it's a basic tenet of my podcast to help you improve your productivity. One of the ways I intend to do this is to introduce you to various Firefox extensions from time to time. Firefox extensions are little tools you download to extend the features of the Firefox web browser. Firefox is designed to be very light, the opposite of bloatware. That means you get to choose what extra features you want to install into it. From time to time, I intend to introduce extensions to Firefox that will help advance your browsing experience. Installing extensions is very easy. You download them, then tell it to install. You give it permission, because of course the Mac always asks permission. Actually, I'm assuming it does that on the PC too. Then you have to restart Firefox to get them to kick in. If you want to jump ahead and check out extensions on your own, go to mozilla.org and search on Firefox extensions. But I promised I'd give you an extension today that would increase your productivity, but I actually lied about that. What I really want to do is tell you about something hilarious. So stupid, it just cracks me up. Do you remember the Swedish chef from the Muppets? Using Internet Explorer gives you more accessibility from the Firefox side if you can fake it once in a while. There's an interesting article over at Wired.com, the authors of Wired magazine, on the subject of pod fading. This is a symptom many podcasters are facing when they get burned out on doing their podcasts. One very common cause of pod fading is that many podcasts don't make it past their fourth episode. I have to admit that I did four, and I kind of stopped after a while. And it wasn't until listener Jay wrote to me and said, "Hey, what's up? Where's the NoSillaCast?" that I realized I actually had an audience and that it was appreciated. Thanks to Jay, I got back in gear and I've been going strong ever since. There are also podcasters who become wildly popular and yet find that the time commitment is too much and they simply throw in the towel. I'm sure glad this hasn't happened to me. I seem to just have a lot of energy for this. It may be because I meter myself to only one a week. A lot of these guys are doing like 2, 3, 4, 5 podcasts a week, and I definitely would pod fade if I tried to do that. It's hard enough to juggle a couple of kids, a husband, a job, and be a radio voice at the same time. Not going to do a bunch of podcasts. Anyway, I'm still going on, still love the energy and excitement. And the main thing is that by having a podcast, I'm not annoying my friends as much talking about all these technology things. Of course, now I'm annoying them talking about my podcast, but well, that's another problem. Last week on the show, I explained what a wiki is and all about Wikipedia. This week, I stumbled across a really cool wiki called Wikimedia Commons. I'm going to take a quote right off their website. The Wikimedia Commons is a project that provides a central repository for free photographs, diagrams, animations, music, spoken text, video clips, and media of all sorts used in pages of any Wikimedia project. So Wikimedia is a site where you can find high-resolution photos to insert into other media with very flexible licensing. Not just photos, but photos is something I happen to always be looking for. I think the best way to get the idea is with an example. I typed butterfly into the Wikimedia Commons search field and found a gorgeous high-res photo, 1299 by 836, of a blue butterfly. It's, of course, downloadable, and it says at the bottom that permission is granted to copy, distribute, and or modify this document under the terms of the GNU Free Documentation License. Check it out at commons.wikimedia.org. I noticed a link on Wikimedia Commons main page for the Wikimedia Foundation, and evidently the Wikimedia Foundation actually operates both Wikipedia and Wikimedia Commons. On the Wikimedia Foundation page, they have a great line that expresses their intent very well. Imagine a world in which every single person is given free access to the sum of all human knowledge. That's what we're doing, and we need your help. What a great thing. I love this stuff. It's just so cool to think people all over the world are putting these photographs and media, different, you know, songs and all this kind of thing up there, and everybody has access to it. It's just so cool. There's a really cute little application for the Mac I thought I'd tell you about. Have you ever wanted to know what a date a particular Mac model came out, or whether the old one you used to have actually had a DVD in it, or was it only a CD? Or which model was it that was codenamed Sawtooth? I can never remember, and it turns out it was really important which one was Sawtooth when you're trying to do upgrades. Or what did the startup chime sound like on the original Bondi Blue iMac? Good news, there's a free little app called Mac Tracker from MacTracker.ca that will give you all those tidbits. I included a little picture in the show notes that shows you what it looks like. I find it really valuable. I'm always going off and looking for silly little things like this. I've probably used it a couple hundred times over the last 10 years. It's been enhanced year over year, and it's a lot of fun. Again, it's free. If you're still struggling with exactly what a podcast is, like you're still listening on the website because you haven't gotten the whole subscription thing down, and you know you want to be hip and understand it, but you still don't get it, or if you have friends you'd like to explain podcasting to, but just can't seem to get through to them on what makes it so cool, there's a great explanation called Podcasting 101. I really recommend you review this page because it's so clearly and concisely written. The Parrot Talks folks at Parrot Talks podcast folks wrote this specifically so people could point to it to explain podcasting. They wrote not just a screen version that you can look at online, but they also made a nice print version as well, so if you wanted to hand it to people. Check it out at parrottalks.com/radio.html. Really, really well done. If you're an aspiring author but don't have a publisher, it's awfully hard to break into the industry. Even if you were able to get a publisher, the industry is built on the idea that the publisher gets reimbursed for all costs before the author gets paid. I suppose it makes sense, but it does mean that if you overestimate how popular your book will be, the cost of all those unsold books will get paid off before you ever get a dime. If you underestimate how popular your book will be, then you paid too much for the original press and you have to go back to press again. The advances in print technology have created a new market for unpublished authors. The place it's exhibited is a place called Lulu Press at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. Lulu uses print on demand, which is a method of making books and other media one at a time. I wish they had some kind of photos of their printer and more info on the technology, but perhaps they keep that as a trade secret. Lulu creates more than just books. They make CDs, DVDs, manuscripts, calendars, but I'm going to walk you through the process of actually creating a book, how you can actually get published in a book. First, you choose the size of your book, and they had, I don't know, four, five, six different sizes, different shapes for the books that you could choose from. And then you enter in information about your book, especially who your intended audience is. So, for example, if you wanted it just for children or just for teens or just for adults, you could specify that. Now you upload your document from your computer to Lulu. Lulu then converts your document to a PDF. Which can take a while, and I can imagine if you had a 500-page book, I think you'd go off and have quite a few cups of coffee while it did that. Then you choose your binding choices. So, like, they had manuscript with a spiral bound sort of thing, but then, normal-looking books that you could choose from. And you choose the colors you want to use, and those colors and binding options do affect the price of your choices. You can upload cover art as well for the front and back of your book, or choose from their gallery just to generate your cover. They also have, for the more advanced users, you can upload a PDF where you know exactly what you're doing to create a single wraparound cover if you're getting really good at this. You'll also get to choose whether people will just download or print a book or both, ch charging different fees for those different options. Now you get to choose, you're getting to the good part. The last step is you get to choose how much money you want to make, your royalty on each book. Lulu charges 25% of your royalty amount as their fee, which they say is 20% of the profits on the book, and then you get 80% of the profit. That's some weird math, but I finally figured out what they meant. Taking this as an example, if you choose to make $4 on the book, they charge $1, which is 25%. But when you add them together, the total profit on the book is $5. Since they charge $1, that's 80% of the total profit. Okay, you probably didn't care about that, but it bugged the daylights out of me what their math was doing. I listened to it 5 or 6 times till I figured out what they were doing. Anyway, this is an interesting business model since they calculate what it'll cost for them to create the physical book for you, and they recover that cost first, and then the real profit share is with them on that last percentage. I shouldn't say first. If someone buys a book, the profit is on top of the cost to create the book, and you get paid at the same time they do. I really like that idea, kind of that profit sharing deal. There's an excellent demo on the website that walks you through this whole process, complete with little moving screenshots, shows the person clicking and explaining how all the different choices go, and an audio explanation of how it works along with that. If you're not an author, there's lots of fun here for you as well, because of course you can buy books at Lulu too. That's probably the important part of it. It's kind of like buying music from independent artists. Here you're buying books from independent authors. They have a nice site that's well organized and easy to browse. Service providers are also available to help you with reviewing of your manuscript, designing the cover of your books, and even marketing services. I think this is a tremendous concept with a real breakthrough idea, so check it out at lulu.com. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of the NoSillaCast for this week. As always, feedback is very welcome at allison@podfeet.com, and thanks for listening and stay subscribed.